The Guardian.
World Cup, every 4 years is the World Cup, World Cup. If you dump a cup of grunge in the build-up, then we'll love it when you score a goal.
Ooh, did you see that?
World Cup, it might all end in tears or a headbutt. Headbutt. You can follow all the blogging on your laptop. From Slovenia to Slovakia, from Nigeria to the Côte d'Ivoire.
Ah, Côte d'Ivoire.
The Guardian and Observer, packed with World Cup coverage every day.
World Cup Daily. Today, we've the best of the Day 9 action as the World Cup bangs its first gavels. Cameroon out, Holland in the second round. After Denmark's win, we hail Olsen's 11 and ask a Dutchman, Holland, why so flat? Also today, your posts, England dominating, strange to hear those two words in the same sentence, as after Rooney's booze hell, we hear your thoughts on what went wrong and offer five good reasons for English fans, three good reasons for... a reason for England fans to be cheerful. Then it's on to Sunday. And as the two most successful nations in World Cup history swing back into action, we preview Italy's monster clash with New Zealand and get that man Fernando Duarte to talk us through Brazil, Ivory Coast. All of that in today's World Cup Daily. Hello there. Nice to hear that little musical intro there at the start. Another live recording today. We're at the Sean Wright Phillips Appreciation Society. Things are a little bit quieter, I'm noticing. But a perfect mellow vibe in many ways for what is surely, for so many of you, a Sunday morning listen. Tom Lutz and Scott Murray here from the Guardian Sports Desk.
Hello. Hi there, James.
Hello there. World Cup, eh?
Isn't it just?
It was a little bit quieter today, wasn't it? I apologise to, you know, Australian fans and Danish fans who must have had a terrific time, and Dutch fans, of course. But, yeah, just had that little bit of a feeling. It lacked a little bit of the intensity of the names of the last couple of days. But interesting. Gave us a chance to just pause, take stock a little bit of the tournament so far. Because, of course, it's so easy to jump to conclusions in a World Cup, isn't it? Well, we were saying before we took to the skies that similar point of the last World Cup, you'd have said that Spain and Argentina were nailed-on certs for the final, and France were all but out, and England looked pretty shaky.
And Germany looked good at the start of... well, I mean, they carried on being good, but they didn't
and
get
Italy as well, yeah.
And talking jumping to conclusions, we all thought England were rubbish after the first game in this World Cup, and it was completely disproved last night.
Tom, how ironic you are. Yes. I tell you what, well, let's get on to Sunday's action after we bring you one or two news headlines from the World Cup.
Bong!
Nicolas Anelka has been sent home by France for telling manager Raymond Domenech, go f*** yourself, you son of a whore, during Friday's disastrous defeat to Mexico. Anelka is now set to miss whole days of the French campaign, with the rest of the squad likely to follow him on Tuesday. The problem isn't Anelka, it's the traitor among us, says Patrice Evra. Someone in this group leaked this, someone who wishes the French team harm, which narrows it down to just 23 people.
Bong.
Meanwhile, FIFA say they'll increase matchday security after a disgruntled fan in an England shirt got into the team's changing room on Friday. The man managed to successfully pass his way through, Police Colonel Billy Jones said. That's how we knew he was an imposter. Stewards then allowed him to slip back into the crowd, unbelievably enough, at the end of the match. Police say they think he's still in Cape Town. Likely to remain there a bit longer than England, some would say.
World Cup Daily with James Richardson. Just like being in South Africa.
Now, first team going home, we know this now, is Cameroon after the Group E matches on Saturday. A lively match this, wasn't it, Scott? You were doing the minute by minute, and I imagine your fingers were red raw after that.
Yeah, I mean, it was a pretty poor day up until that game. And I don't think it was a match that anyone was particularly expecting a great deal of, but it was fantastic end-to-end stuff. The defending was abysmal, especially from Denmark. And with Aga and Simon Kier, is that how you pronounce his name?
Kier.
Right, okay. Well, Aga and Kier, you would expect them to have been pretty solid at the back, and they were anything but. Although Kier was fantastic going forward.
He's suspended, though, for the next match, isn't he?
And he is, yeah. He picked up a second booking. So that's a bit of a downside for Denmark, but I mean, they look fantastic. They scored two of the goals of the tournament.
Tell us about those goals of the tournament, Scott.
Well, I mean, the first one was Kier spraying a lovely ball, sort of diagonal ball, raking ball out to Romadal.
62 yards.
Was it 62 yards? Yeah. Right. This is like watching Sky Sport.
Yeah.
Something like that. And then Romadal slipped over Bentness, slipped in. I mean, Bentner, in fact, was fantastic for Denmark. He set up the second goal. It was another raking ball. He was, you know, Bentner's someone who gets quite a lot of stick in England for not necessarily being the most level-headed striker, but he was fantastic pinging the ball around.
Well, YouTube warriors will know that he does have a terrific track record with the Danish national team. Cameroon, it was a shame for them in many ways. You know, they were a lot better, and after all the unrest that followed their opening game, they looked like they were all rowing in the same direction, as the expression is. Eto scoring, etc., but out they go, Tom.
It was another bad game for the African sides after South Africa's loss, and Nigeria and Cameroon are the only two sides to have lost both their games. So from what looked like a positive start to the World Cup for African sides, it's starting to look down. And if you're ripped apart by Dennis Romadol, you're in a bit of trouble. Mm. Having said that, he was very good against Holland as well. I didn't realise he still existed. I was there for my Panini album for the game against Holland. And then I was like, isn't Dennis Romadol about 84 now? He's only 32.
I didn't realise Panini albums still exist.
They do still exist, Dennis
Romadol. I think it'll be quite interesting to see what happens to Paul Le Guin. I can sort of imagine just after the game, this big dust cloud with fists and feet sticking out of it, cartoon style, in the Cameroon dressing room, because I don't think... This was the team that Eto wanted in the first game. They played very well, even though they lost.
They had a bundle of chances, didn't they?
Yeah, and it was just, you know, I think like Le Guin has been sort of proved wrong on this one. Can't see him lasting. Well, he'll certainly not last after the finals. It'd be quite interesting to see if he gets sacked mid-run. That hasn't happened for a while.
Yeah. Well, by all accounts, Eto's the de facto manager these days anyway, no?
I think so, yes. Yeah. According to Paul Doyle, anyway. And I always believe what Paul Doyle tells me.
Very wise policy. Denmark will be playing Japan. Netherlands then through with 6 points. And they are now through. Japan and Denmark tied on 3 points, but Denmark a slightly worse goal difference. They have to beat Japan, basically, in their last game. Japan, meantime, after their opening victory, beaten by yet another uninspiring Dutch side. Hear a little bit more about the whole Holland business. ESPN.com's Leander Scheer-Lackens, who's now on the line from Johannesburg. Leander, how are you?
I'm very well, James. How are you?
We're all very well here. Through but not thrilling, the Dutch. What's been the reaction of Dutch journalists like yourself to this beginning?
Well, you know, we Dutch put a premium on attractive soccer. In two matches thus far, we've played 20 minutes, really, of good football, I should really call it, for the English market. But somehow still collected 6 points, which, you know, is pretty good work if you can get it. I'm sure the English would sign for that. It's really been lackluster. They were poor, again, as they were against Denmark. Again, they faced a defensive opponent, but a team that specializes in holding the ball and breaking down opponents over the wing really shouldn't have any problems with that.
Why did they have problems? Is it just because the wingers that you're using, Kout and Van der Vaart, are not proper wingers, or what?
Well, I think you hit the nail on the head there. I mean, when they play Van der Vaart on the left, he's really just a glorified central midfielder. So he can't resist the natural urge to drift towards the center. Kout, of course, as we know, is not a natural winger. He tries his best, bless his heart, to stay out on the right. But he, too, has a tendency to cut inside. So when you don't play Robben and you don't play natural wingers like Elgero Elia or maybe even Ryan Babel, you make the field much narrower. And the Dutch style of play is premised on making the field as big as possible when in possession. They're just not very good at playing through the middle. So when you rob yourself of that, you really make it much harder to score goals, as we've seen.
Yeah, they look as narrow as one of those houseboats on the canals in Amsterdam. A little metaphor for Dutch listeners out there. Is it going to change, do you think, especially now that qualification is assured in perhaps the final group game? Are we going to see Elia?
Well, I wrote after the first game that Van Marwijk, the coach, would be a fool not to start him, especially because Van der Vaart, all he's really produced are a few shots from distance that were blocked. He's just not been that good, and it seems that, if anything, his main qualification within his team is to back up Wesley Sneijder, in a central attacking midfield role. I just don't see a role for him out on the left. So I would put Ayer on the left, and as soon as Robin is back, I'd put him on the right instead of Bierkaut. I think those are changes that will have to be made if the Dutch are to make anything of this tournament.
Mm. What's been the Dutch reaction to England's magnificent start to the tournament?
Well, you know, like the rest of the world, really befuddled. I mean, it's just so hard to explain. Of course, nobody thinks of the English quite as highly as the English themselves do, so it's not quite that much of a surprise as it is to you over there. But nevertheless, that is a team that's probably underperforming, more than anybody in this tournament.
Well, I would say so. I would say so. Excellent stuff. Well, thank you very much for joining us. You're enjoying the tournament, are you, Leander?
I am indeed. I even had the honour of running into Sean Ingle yesterday at Ellis Park.
Well, we'll give him our regards. We've yet to hear from Sean. Was he exiting in hot pursuit by a dog or anything?
He was actually. He didn't have very long for me. But it was understandable. He had to get off to go off to get a bus or something. I hadn't seen him actually since I was doing work experience at the Guardian some 6 years ago now.
Wow. Has he changed much, Leander, do you think?
Well, I noticed that he doesn't have his blonde highlights anymore, so that was certainly a change for the better.
That was Group E then. Group D was completing its second set of matches on Saturday, and much better from Australia as they took on Ghana. But a 1-1 draw in the end. Hartinic Cynic posting in saying Australia punished for North Korean tactic of strikers playing as goalkeepers because Harry Kuehl with a protest, though he might, with the handball and the red card, etc. So a 1-1 draw with Ghana. As I say, very plucky stuff from the Australians. They're playing for an hour with just 10 men. And Ghana topping the group, though, so that's better news. Although they do now play Germany, which is going to be quite a humdinger of a final group match, that one.
I mean, they also didn't look half as impressive in their game today, Ghana, than they did in the first game.
Did you think they looked impressive in the game against Serbia?
This is what I was going to go on to say. I just wonder whether Ghana got a lot of plaudits. And the comparison I would make is to Maicon's goal, which, without going into that, I think he didn't mean that goal, and I think a lot of people were I think a lot of people were projecting what they want to happen onto the screen, and I think this kind of happened, you know, because it's the African World Cup, there's a lot of people on the African sides to do well very naturally. And Ghana played all right in the first game, but was it that great a performance now? And I think they were kind of found out today. I mean, you know, a few people were suggesting that maybe they'd give England a problem if the two teams were to meet in the second round. I don't think they'd give them any problem.
I don't know. You mentioned England, though, he said, moving on.
Yes, I did.
To another. Yeah. Lots of people posting in today about Friday night's extraordinary 0-0 with Algeria. So many topics raised. Padrageous 76, expect Rooney to be eating a tin of beans in a caravan with a massive gut and ginger beard anytime soon. Ruprecht, is it indicative of England's performance that the cute little bird seen nestling on the Algerian goal changed ends at half time? As you probably read, Rooney has scored no goals and has no assists now in six appearances in the World Cup. For many, the biggest disappointment, although the stats that Ben Producer furnishes, Ree Heskey, 24 minutes before he successfully passed to a teammate, would suggest that he's in the running for that too. What is the problem? Well, nobody knows, although there's plenty of theories. Ugini says, I'm pretty sure England's constant failure at World Cups will at some point turn the event into the football equivalent of the Eurovision in the collective English mind. We're better than everyone else, we just don't bother, being the rationale there. This will suit the English psyche much better with Graham Norton replacing Gary Lineker on the BBC's sofa. Lovely idea there. Simplicikins, and he drops for glory, and Globalize, all saying that basically Capello froze in the headlights. Although I noticed that that man, Graham Souness, had an alternative theory, which he was positing on RTE. I don't know if you saw this on Saturday.
I didn't know, but please tell
us. Well, a couple of people were posting in saying that Souness puts it all down to
England's physical preparation and the fact that they've based themselves at Rustenburg. Why? Well, because Rustenburg's at altitude. Only one of the three group games is at altitude. And when you spend time, in this case 3-4 weeks at altitude, what happens is that your body accustoms itself to the different conditions. And while it's doing that, it really, really struggles to produce enough oxygen to power your muscles. So basically, your legs just go weak. It saps your strength. And according to Sinés, who seemed to be hinting that he had strong medical opinion and inside information to back him up on this, the kind of nadir of their physical condition will be more or less when they face Slovenia in the final group game.
Brilliant timing.
It is brilliant timing, if that is the case. And it is a very convincing theory, because when you watch them against Algeria, it was almost as if somebody really had come in and, you know, stuck something in their coffee.
Although it's happened in previous World Cups. In 2006, they looked drained from the first game against Paraguay. They had to rely on an own goal, and against Ecuador in the last 16. So it's an interesting theory, but I do just think that mentally they feel the pressure.
Really?
I think that might be the thing. Is it not the case, instead of getting physically tired? I mean, you can get quite tired thinking about stuff as well.
Yeah.
And I don't think many of these England players think about stuff. Although the thing is, I think they're possibly doing a little bit of thinking at the World Cup.
Right.
On account of not having all the... When they play for the club teams, there's usually someone better alongside them. You know, Steven Gerrard, his career really blossomed when Xabi Alonso came alongside him. Frank Lampard's career, he got very good when all the Chelsea money started getting spent and the foreigners came in. And Wayne Rooney plays alongside Darren Fletcher, obviously, as well. But now they're having to force the issue themselves, and when they're standing in the centre circle, the finger goes up to the bottom lip, they have to think about things. This is tiring.
But
Sunes might have a point.
Right, okay, although he might not. Here's De Hoda saying, on the Sunes theory, Germany's base camp is in Pretoria on a similar altitude. They seem to be able to run, though, and pass. It's all a matter of camp, guys. I have to say, one of the other things, you know this is clearly just speculation, but when you saw the way Rooney was performing and talking on Friday, and David James's remarks afterwards, the subtext there seemed to be that everybody's well fed up with everybody else, and everybody's well fed up with one person in particular there at Rustenburg. It should make for an interesting book this time around, at least, post-World Cup. Look forward to those. Anyway, I mentioned rather ill-advisedly at the start that we might have, you know, some reasons to be cheerful, motives for optimism. Tom?
Well, when I go abroad,
yes,
I find that pillows in hotels in other countries are usually quite thick.
Mm.
That's quite bad for my neck.
Right.
And when I come back to Britain, it's a lot easier to find a flat pillow.
All right, so they'll be more comfortable in a week's time.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah.
Tom, I'm not sure that's entirely what we were looking for. Should mention on the pillow front that, of course, Wayne Rooney has his very own special pillow.
Well, you'll notice that Sean Wright Phillips and Wayne Rooney bought their own pillows to South Africa.
You know about Wayne Rooney's pillow?
No.
Pillow, yeah? It's wired for sound. You can plug an MP3 player into it, and it will play music, as indeed such things do. In fact, producer Ben's telling me that the manufacturers have even sent me one. That's very sweet of them.
Have you used it?
Sorry, I haven't. No, Ben's got it in the boot of his car.
I'll do it tonight, and then report back tomorrow. I'll be interested to see the results.
Okay.
That fills in a minute of tomorrow's programme.
It certainly does, doesn't it? Yeah, in the style to which it is accustomed. Producer Ben also couldn't come up with any reasons. As far as he got was that we're the only World Cup team whose right back received a police fine for being caught putting a toilet seat into a box with a cheaper price tag and hiding a set of taps under his jumper.
So hold on, there's four people who have tried to think of three reasons each for England fans to be optimistic.
Okay. Oh, there's plenty of reasons for them to be optimistic.
And we've come up with two. And
no,
one
okay, here's
a
reason for,
Italy,
for England to be optimistic.
Seat.
Italy in 1982, absolutely woeful. Worst team in the World Cup in the group stages. Didn't win a single game, three draws.
Mm.
And it's a question of coming together. It's a question of acclimatising. It's a question of things falling into place at the right time. I guess the most worrying thing about what's happened so far, and the kind of atmosphere that you saw hints of after the Algeria game is the fact that we seem to be moving away from a group spirit as opposed to towards it. But, you know, that might just be just the effects of another poor result. You know, so many things can change.
When they walked off the other night.
Yes.
They seemed, and I know you could spin this as being a good point, but they seemed exceptionally angry. You know, the looks on their faces were real aggressive frowns. And they just did cut the look of people who were going to go in and start having it out with each other rather than just being genuinely upset. I guess you could spin it into, yeah, well, they're showing some passion. I'm not entirely sure real anger. This is particularly constructive.
But I don't think, like, the likes of Wayne Rooney didn't show passion and energy against Algeria. If anything, Rooney tried... He was drifting away from what he's done well at Man United this season, which is just stay up front, score goals. But he was tearing around the pitch again, back on in his own area making tackles.
You see him do that for United, though, and he does it so effectively. He's one of the best counter-attacking forwards in the world.
But he doesn't do it so often, and I don't think when he's at United he drops back all the time and tries to be this playmaker, which he just isn't that type of player.
Last season, why he was so good for United was he'd stopped doing what he did in previous seasons, which was tearing around over it. And the stats bore out. I did something for the paper last season, and the touches he took last season were mainly in the last third of the pitch, whereas seasons previously it was pretty much spread out between the first two thirds of the pitch. So he had actually concentrated more in the final attacking third, and against Algeria he was going back to his old bad habits. I mean, it's interesting to say they're bad habits. In one way he's working for the team, but he's just panicking and not concentrating on attacking, basically.
Oh, nice. Do you think it's going to, very briefly, because everybody's talking about this, is it going to change? Is he going to be on his own up front with Gerrard supporting, blah blah blah, Joe Cole, etc.?
I thought he looked better when Jermaine Defoe came.
Did you?
Actually, yeah. Mm. I thought he looked a lot better.
Scott?
It won't change.
Group F. Paraguay, Italy, New Zealand, Slovakia, all on exactly the same points. They all drew 1-1. Sunday sees Slovakia and Paraguay come face-to-face in what's set to be a humdinger. In my mind, I see this as two teams playing chicken, each waiting for the other to blink, sitting there with the ball probably sat in the centre circle for 45 minutes, waiting for the other one to come and get it so they can do some proper defending. I might be wrong.
Paraguay looked decent against your lot, though, didn't they?
I'm still thinking about it. Ben's just asked me, can chickens blink? I don't know. sorry, Scott, your point?
There wasn't much of one.
I would have
stuck with chickens blinking. I mean, I think Italy, obviously, a very decent side, and Paraguay gave them a good game.
Do you think so?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, Slovakia tried their best against New Zealand.
Mm.
They've got a couple
Both
of decent...
Both teams took the lead and were pegged back, and was Slovakia in... the most surprising of circumstances. Paraguay, I wasn't overly impressed with. I know the Italians were very disparaging about them because they'd made all sorts of noises before about how they were really going to take the game to Italy and did quite the opposite. But they did counterattack very, very effectively. You'd fancy their chances perhaps more than those of the Slovakians. Italy, meanwhile, will be taking on the aforementioned New Zealand, who famously took the lead, I think, three times in a friendly match with Italy last summer in South Africa, but were eventually beaten 4-3. The Italians are a bit concerned because they traditionally have awful problems in their second games in World Cup. In 10 World Cups, they've only won 4 second group games. Plus, they haven't won a game all year, Tom.
I don't think it's going to be a classic either. New Zealand have basically said they're a big team, that they're just going to try and bully Italy physically.
Cool.
Which might be good if you like a fight. Or you like rugby, but it doesn't sound like...
I don't want to be a fight. We basically have some New Zealand people wandering towards Italians who will then succumb to the laws of gravity.
Yes.
And et cetera, and much hand-wringing and that kind of thing. Marcello Lippi, not very happy with the situation. You may have seen shouting at his forwards during training the other day. The reason being is that they're not scoring any goals. In fact, during the Paraguay game, they didn't manage a single shot on goal, the forwards, which is a bit sad. Anyway, he was slamming balls into the turf and saying, how are you going to score if you never get into the box? Which is good. It's exactly what they need to hear. But he's going to go with exactly the same lineup, say the papers, to the Paraguay game, although it is going to be shifted into the 4-4-2, which is much more effective in the second half. Of course, Gigi Buffon not there because he's got the herniated disc. Federico Marchetti coming in, who in best North Korean fashion used to be a forward, but is now a very successful goalkeeper. Hey... Enough of my yakking. What about the other action on Sunday? And it is, of course, featuring five-time world champions, Brazil, as they take on the exciting Ivory Coast. Didier Drogba back just in time to face his old friend Lucio from Stamford Bridge days. Woof. Only one man to talk to us about this, and that is Fernando Duarte.
Hey, hello, Jimbo.
Hello. Where in the
world? You okay?
Yeah, where in the wide world of Cape Town Saturday nights are you?
I'm not in Cape Town, I'm actually in Durban.
Durban? Ooh.
Yeah, it was a copycat of Rio de Janeiro, to be honest.
Yeah? Beaches? Yeah. Surf?
Yeah, beaches and peaches.
And peaches.
I'm talking about the sea.
Yeah. All right, great. Fantastic. You're having a lovely time, eh?
Yeah, so far so good. Unfortunately, Brazil is spoiling my good time, you know?
Oh, come on. You're top of the group. You won that tricky game with the highly rated North Koreans.
Yeah, very tricky game. I mean, we managed to concede to North Korea, James.
Yes.
I actually, every time I think we're managing better to ourselves, we end up basically doing even worse.
Well, I have to say that everything is relative. Fernando, you have opened up with a victory, whereas some countries are struggling to even find the net.
To talking about England, yes, we should be rejoicing in comparison to England, but still, it was a difficult game that could prove costly to us. I mean, if we end up needing goal difference, etc., that single goal from North Korea can cost us dear.
Were you sweating during the North Korea game, Fernando?
I wasn't sweating. I never thought they were going to be able to actually embarrass us in terms of actually scoring first or tying that game. I was just really worried about the lack of punch, which definitely had more possession. We were rolling the ball around, you know, controlling the game, but we couldn't breach the defense. And let's be honest, Jimbo, it wasn't like the German defense or the Italian defense. We're talking about North Korea. With all due respect to the emerging nations in the Asian continent, we should actually be able to play better against them.
I love that phrase, with all due respect. But anyway, was the country, was Brazil happy with the win? What was the reaction back home?
Well, of course, people were celebrating the goals, but the same doubts I've got are also in the minds of the people. People were really kind of like worried that we struggled to beat, to be honest, a very small side. And when we're talking about a group with the Ivory Coast and Portugal, that raises a bit of concern, to be honest. And tomorrow's game will be massive, not only for points or qualification, but also for the confidence of the players and of the supporters as well. I mean, people are a bit jittery, to be honest.
I can imagine, especially with those Argentines playing so well. Oh, just one thing, Fernando. Here, there's been a lot of debate over Maicon's goal. Has there been any questions in Brazil about whether he meant it or not?
Well, the most patriotic journalist wrote that he scored the screamer. The most observant journalist basically said that he meant to cross that. And if you look at the replay, Maicon looks to the middle of the box as if he was trying to spot who was going to be there to tap that ball in. And then he basically prays to whatever he believes in and fires a shot. He was lucky. Some people are talking to him in the mix zone. I mean, in that zone, the players actually go around after the game to apparently talk and ignore the press at the same time. He actually said that he meant it, but by his reaction at the moment of the goal, before he hit the ball and afterwards, I think he was lucky. I think he did a Ronaldinho, to be honest.
Oh, stop, Fernando. You're destroying all my illusions here. But what about the fact that he's already scored a very similar goal against Portugal a year or two ago?
Well, that was different. He was going diagonally towards goal, and basically his entire body language, the entire design of the play, you know, meant that he was trying for that goal against North Korea. Seriously, he's going to try that 6-7 times more. He's not going to score a goal like that again. Right. Having said that, amazing that he actually had the guts to do something with that ball in a moment that we were really, really struggling in that game, James.
Yeah, indeed so. Kaká, on the other hand, didn't have the guts to try pretty much anything except return any passes made in his direction.
I think the problem is in his head as well. He struggled with those nagging injuries for most of last season. He was in Madrid with the whole atmosphere against him, with people criticizing him. I reckon he needs a bit of love, to be honest. And until he gets the confidence, we could be in for like a very, very bad World Cup for him.
All right.
He seemed really, really, really jaded. He didn't seem able to actually do stuff. I hope that the greatness of the next two games will kind of like poke him into action.
All right, Fernando. Well, listen, you get a good night's rest, and we look forward to hearing from you soon, eh?
No problem, man. I'm here. Just call me.
Absolutely.
It's a pleasure to be talking to you guys. I mean, it's really funny. I met some fans of the podcast here, people who actually bought me drinks and saying a lot of good things about the team and, you know, and the whole project. So I'm pretty chuffed.
Wow, the power of pod, eh? That's fantastic. And hello to you, South African-based people, pod listeners, if you did buy Fernando a drink. That act of charity will be, no doubt, rewarded in good time. Lovely. Very good. There you go. Worldwide, there is but one family of pod. good. Ivory Coast, Sven-Göran Eriksson. Always good to see him in a World Cup.
Yeah.
Slightly incongruous, him there in his lab coat on the Ivory Coast bench in their opener. And what do you think?
Paul Doyle had written something about the game tomorrow saying that some Ivorians actually think they play better without Drogba in the team because there's less, it's kind of less pressure just to give the ball to him, and the other players kind of can play their more natural game rather than being overshadowed by Drogba. But he'll be in the team tomorrow, so that's their idea stuffed anyway.
Well, when he did come on, though, it did seem to
personally, I think they are better with Drogba in the team. But it's interesting to see this national hero, this national icon that not all Ivorians venerate him.
Right.
But I think Brazil will win tomorrow. Ivory Coast were pretty poor against Portugal.
And as we say, Lucio must be looking forward to seeing him again.
Very much so, yeah.
Yeah, nice one. All right, well, that's all to come then on Sunday at the end of Brazil's match with the Ivory Coast. We will be recording our usual wrap-up on the day's events, World Cup Daily, so do join us for that. In the meantime, thanks pretty to Ben, Scott Murray, Tom Lutz, and you, the listener, and we'll speak to you tomorrow.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.